From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear this show at KCRW.com. Documentarian Doug Prey makes films, well, about de facto families. You look at his films Hype, which dealt with the Seattle music scene in the 90s, or Scratch, which looked at the DJ culture. They were a kind of a family with family codes and the kinds of a behavior. In his new film, Surfwise, it is about an actual family, the family of the legendary Doc Paskowitz, who turned his family into a tribe of guerrilla surfers. Doug, first of all, welcome back. Thanks for doing the show again.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I wonder, part what attracted to the family of Doc Paskowitz is just that he was such an incredible figure. I mean, to get somebody who walked away from either he was, I guess there's talk about him being a gubernatorial prospect in Hawaii, and he was the head of the AMA. He came out of Stanford Medical School. He could, in a lot of ways, he was kind of a hero.
He kind of had it all going for himself. But I think deep in his heart, he was a surfer. And he had a couple bad divorces, and he kind of decided to go to Israel for a year and find himself. And our movie kind of begins at that moment where it sort of starts telling the story of a guy who basically just said, you know what, I want to live life in the right way. And to him, the right way was all about health. And that ties into surfing, because surfing obviously is an incredibly healthy thing to do, but he has specific diet rules too. Like, you know, his entire philosophy can be boiled down to we are deeply out of touch with the animal side of our lives, and we should eat more like wild animals, which means a lot less and a lot healthier of what we do eat. We should also get plenty of rest and exercise and recreation and other things like that. And he's a big advocate of sex, and he's you know, His way of living life was, we need to get back to that because we're just losing touch. It isn't a medical movie, and it's not a tribute to Dorian Paskowitz, although it certainly could have been. The movie is about the family. The movie is about how he had 9 kids. They all lived in this little camper, like a 24-foot camper, and they were all homeschooled. I mean, they went to school maybe for like a week at a time every couple of years or something, but they were definitely homeschooled. And they ate according to this kind of rigid diet, and you know, that's how Doc and Juliet, his wife, they wanted to lead their lives. And the movie just is about what happens when you do that.
He was a real disciplinarian in his family. I mean, he laid down the terms, and the family had to live up to what he wanted. And just sort of watching the way the kids grew up in this is fascinating, because you look at some of the footage that you show in the film, and it seems like this sort of ideal kind of hippie family, yeah, almost based on what we think surfers are kind of like. And there's actually nothing like that.
Well, it's kind of both. That's what I guess what I enjoyed about making the movie is both statements are true. In a way, it was idyllic. And I think like for the life that they lived from when the kids were born until when they basically went into adolescence, I think it was pretty idyllic. And all 9 of the Paskowitz children, who are now grown, they're in their 30s and 40s, they will all tell you that was the coolest childhood in they could have ever had. You know, like no geometry, they get to surf all day long. You know, they did read, and they were definitely homeschooled. But it was, you know, it was very free. It was almost the quintessential kind of Southern California experience that they had. And I think that they.
But you know, it's funny, as I was watching the movie, though, it's like the Blue Lagoon. As soon as they kind of become sexually interested, then things kind of went off the rails a little bit.
Well, they all mutinied. And they all – and again, you know, that's sort of the other side of the film, is that the Paskowitz family, they're all incredibly candid, you know, which as a filmmaker is kind of nice anyway, just to do interviews with people who are so – just let it all hang out and just talk to you. And they're so honest about both the good and the bad that I was able to, in the movie, build up the dream, this perfect ideal, and then also just kind of completely show like how twisted it was and how – for some of the kids, it really had a dark side. And, you know, none of them are going to go back on their dad. And this isn't like some sordid tragedy. It's not like Capturing the Freedmans or something. It's really, you know, it's an inspiring story. But I just love the fact that the kids were all so honest about how they feel, even today, you know, and the struggles they've had and the kinds of things they've looked at over the years and said, like, God, I wonder if that was right, you know.
It's The Treatment. My guest is documentarian Doug Prey. His new film is Surfwise. But even the way he homeschooled his kids is something that lots of people do now. I mean, there's so many things that he did that he was kind of a pioneer. What's fascinating, too, though, is that that homeschooling built the kids into that unit that was able to rebel. I mean, he sort of built his own kind of insurrection in the house.
I think so. Well, he was essentially antagonistic. I mean, he didn't want anything. It was a little bit like a cult, and I use that word cautiously because, you know, it's a family. But I think sometimes families can be sort of cult-like. And I think, you know, I mean, so can businesses and so can rock and roll bands. I mean, when you have a really super charismatic leader who has a set of ideals and is beginning to define the inside world and the outside world as being very different and having a lot of suspicion about the outside world, that is definitely what, you know, how Dorian Paskowitz felt about the outside world. He didn't want to have his kids in the public school system, and he didn't want to be messing around with all the other business stuff that, you know, is sort of a place not to be trusted.
He has a lot of anger towards the outside world, too, that is kind of a puzzle to the kids.
Well, he does. And then when they all grow up and rebel and kind of leave the camper, because, I mean, part of the rebellion, too, you know, it took on the form of just wanting food or, you know, wanting like donuts. And I mean, they ate so healthy. And again, this is back in the 60s and 70s. It was not at all. At that time, it was not hip to be eating healthy like we all are trying to do now. He was an early pioneer of kind of preventive health and eating like this. And they were in an isolated environment. So when they got old enough and they would finally go to some other friend's house and see that they had donuts for breakfast and see that, you know, they were running around and going into the city and doing all this other stuff, it was like, oh, wow, we got to do that. And then they all rebelled, like you said, just like Doc did. So they all left at different ages. I mean, some of them literally left the camper like 13 or 14, and some of them left at 17. And there's 9 of them, so there's 9 completely different stories. But they all basically at some point just said, okay, I'm on my own, and then went out.
What's fascinating, too, and I wonder if part of the reason you were attracted to the story is that he really is like a natural star. I mean, he's so charismatic. I mean, even at into his late age, he still just holds the screen.
He's a very intense man, and he's very inspirational to a lot of people. I mean, he is in the world of surfing. There are thousands of surfers who have not only learned how to surf from him and certainly his family, but he's inspired a lot of people, and he is a doctor. He's not a doctor who surfs. He's a surfer who doctors. And so everywhere he goes, he kind of administers this kind of he'll come up to you and like pinch your belly and say like you're dying, you know, like because he's so into health and making sure that we're not overweight and, you know, that our whole culture is killing ourselves on being overweight and that's leading to all the heart disease. And, you know, like how can your brain be functioning properly when you are like however many pounds he thinks I'm overweight? And I'm pretty tall and thin, just for what it's worth. Like, that's like, you know. And so, but he's like that with everybody. But to get back to the inspirational part, he is legendary in the surf world. And he is, you know, definitely has that aloha spirit. But I was just interested in how if you take something, even a beautiful dream of just having a close family and doing this, that even that can turn on its head. And again, it's not a tragedy, but it just, I'm a dad, I have 2 kids, and it's like, you think about these issues all the time.
It's a treatment, my guest is director Doug Prey. His new film is director of documentary Surfwise. I guess I'm fascinated by this too, because one of the things that's so key to your films is somebody passing something down. I think back to, well, gosh, I guess Scratch, you know, with Bambaataa and Jam Master Jay. And just that sort of sense of something being passed along, you know, which is also a very big family thing. And the sort of the double-edged sword in that passing those things down that he passes down in Surfwise.
Again, all of the kids have lived like him. And actually, at this point in their lives, they would like to get back to that kind of like that true state of health that he talks about all the time. So right now, they're in their 40s and they've kind of been, you know, they've rebelled, they've left, and they've sort of found their own lives, and they're no longer like total pure disciples. But they're all interested in carrying on that message.
And that, to me, is kind of the tragedy, is that they all really, you know, engineered their own escapes from what they thought was you know, being oppressed, and to some extent they were, but, you know, as soon as they really got out into the world, they saw that they had left paradise behind.
It is, but it's the essential question is it selfish as a father to kind of do exactly what you believe and essentially make your family go along for the ride? Is that a selfish act, or is that kind of it? Is that the most? Is that the ultimate thing you can do as a father, you know, or as a mother? You know, that's the question that I still to this day can't quite answer, but the film tries to explore.
Well, that's a question that happens in a lot of the films you've done, which, again, I think are all about families, that kind of sense of what people get from one person and about those very close relationships, and then sort of stepping back and seeing kind of the repercussions of those kinds of behaviors. You know, I mean, family means so much the way you make films that it's amazing to me to hear you say that you hadn't thought about that way before, because I think Big Rig is about dying families, you know?
Looking at my movies and saying they're all about families, it's more that I think of all the people and all the one thread going through all of my documentaries is that they're all fiercely independent people. They're all people who've essentially rejected society on some level, or the way things used to be, or traditions, or and they're all, you know, striving very hard to be independent. And the big difference with this movie was that, unlike my other films, which were about kind of about subcultures and a number of characters within those subcultures, in this film I was finally able to tell a single story that had a single emotional arc. And as a filmmaker, that was just a gift. It really felt great, because I've always, you know, in my movies, I've always wanted to get into the characters more than I've felt I was allowed. I mean, a lot of my previous films, like in Infamy, this graffiti movie, I kept thinking, I really want to make a whole movie just about this guy Saber, or this guy Tumor, or whoever, you know, just any one of those six characters I felt was deserving of a whole feature film. But instead, it becomes a little bit episodic, or I kind of am telling a lot of different stories. And with Surfwise, it just felt so great to realize, you know what? I can have an act one, act two, and an act three. I can literally build and create an emotion that runs through the whole thing. You know, you can go up and you can come down, but it's always the same story. It's the same family. That was, to me, the big difference between Surfwise and Big Rig or some of the other films that I've completed.
But one of the things I like about the films too, and this certainly lends itself to it, is the awareness of media. I mean, with the exception maybe of Big Rig, there's an awareness that the people have that, you know, other people are looking at them.
It's true. And what was interesting about the Paskowitz family in Surfwise, they were a media event. Like during the 70s, Connie Chung came to the camper and did a whole story on the Paskowitz family. They were if the kids are in a bad mood, they'll say, you know, we were a freak show. If they're praising what happened, it was this beautiful thing, and like here was this amazing family. Like to the outside world, it was sort of like the Partridge Family on surfboards, you know. Yeah. And by the way, they don't go to school. And by the way, they're all really musical. And by the way, they're interesting. You know, they were I wasn't there, and I'm not a surfer, but I'd give anything if I'd been there in the 70s with a camera to actually meet the family and kind of live in the camper with them for a few weeks. You know?
It's fascinating too, because all those stories kind of treat them like, you know, they're like these sort of amusing oddities and novelties, because partially there wasn't the understanding of surfing that we have now. I mean, nobody really knew how rigorous and tough and demanding a sport surfing was. In fact, it wasn't even thought of as being a sport in the 70s.
It was – they were definitely ahead of the whole kind of selling of the surf industry and that kind of meanness that came with that. I mean, they're very much a part of the kind of older aloha spirit. Again, I'm not a surfer, but so I have to use that word but cautiously. But I mean, they lived in Hawaii, and they were, you know, Doc himself was one of the original 1930s group of surfers who surfed Southern California back when there was, I don't know, maybe 100 or 1,000 surfers, and now there's obviously 100,000 or more. And, you know, I think there's a line in the movie where Izzy Paskowitz, who's also a well-known surfer on his own right, a world champion, and he says something, you know, our whole life is teaching people how to surf and going out in the water and surfing. And it's not a surf movie. I'm certainly not competing with all the, you know, there's been a lot of pretty great surf movies in the last few years. And We don't have like the giant big waves, and we weren't flying around in helicopters getting killer footage like that. But there is that sense of a sort of a cosmic connection to surfing. And those who are into surfing, it is definitely a religion. And when you hang out with the family, you can't help but kind of get inspired along those lines.
It's The Treatment. My guest is director Doug Prey. His new film, the documentary Surfwise, is out now. We'll take a break. There's more to come.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. My guest is documentary maker Doug Prey. His new film is Surfwise. And the thing that fascinates me about what you do in these films is that there are always two sides, which is to say the side that people who just are outsiders or just kind of have some minimal knowledge of Seattle music or scratching or surf, what we think, and then what it's like inside that bubble for people who live in that world. And that's what I really love about the films.
I think I'm always reluctant to get into these movies. Every single one of my films, somebody's approached me and said, hey, let's do this movie. And I've said, no, that's terrible. I'm not Mr. Hip Hop, and I'm not from Seattle or whatever it is. I'm not a truck driver, you know. But every single one, there's been something that hooked me after two or three months of a poor producer just like beating down my doors and saying, come on, please, let's take the meeting. You know, there's always something that eventually hooks me. And I guess it's because it's like a problem. I like solving problems. I'm not the kind of filmmaker who can sit there with a blank page and write, like just invent something. But if I see a huge disparity between what somebody is doing and what they think they're doing, what they love doing and why it's cool, and I see the outside world looking at them and thinking they're an idiot or thinking that they're just some stupid stereotype that completely is not the truth, I love that problem. And I think that's the one thing that sort of hooks me is thinking, you know, this is kind of cool. I can make a surf movie, but it's actually a film about families. And I'll bet you nobody knows that there's like surfers out there who are as interesting and thinking so intensely along the lines of the Paskowitz family. And I would say the same thing about my other films is, you know, people think one way about truck drivers and then you get to know them and you realize, wow, I'm never going to see another truck the same way, you know, when I drive by it on the highway. It's just there's a whole world going on there. And definitely felt the same way about the other subjects. Graffiti writers especially, you know, have just what kind of an image do they have in society, you know? But you get to know them, and they're fascinating. They're completely interesting lives. And I guess I do get off on doing that. There's something about trying to get in there and figure out why they're doing what they're doing. And I guess it's when I get enthused, then I want my movies to enthuse the audience. It's this idea of you're essentially intimidated by something you don't know about. And when it's coming back at you through the media, it gets more intimidating or more fascinating or more desirable. And I just – but at the bottom of it, it's just people. And they're not that cool or they're not that whatever. They're just – there's something great about realizing that the people at the central core of these like incredibly hip or cool cultures are just regular, interesting human beings, you know, with needs and wants and everything else. And I'm not trying to cut them down and make them not cool anymore, but it's just – it's a way of inviting people into that culture to understand it better.
But it's funny too because in all these worlds for the most part, there's something that's slightly dangerous about all of them to the outside world, you know. And you get past that to ask questions about why people are doing this, and that aspect of the danger almost never occurs to any of them. They're just doing it because it's what they love.
Yeah, they're just passionate. With the Paskowitz, it's a little different because, again, surfing culture has such strong stereotypes. They're, in a funny way, they're almost the opposite because they kind of live up to the stereotypes. They really did lead a very interesting, very crazy, and very on-the-edge life. Like, they really do live up to, not the traditional surfing stereotype, but they live up to the stereotype of being real outsiders.
But that's the difference, I think, between Surfwise and maybe the other films, is that, you know, inside these other worlds, these people are really, in a lot of ways, kind of middle class or aspire to something, a kind of acceptance. Whereas the Paskowitzes really didn't want that. I mean, they were completely divorced from that. They were pursuing something. And maybe until 10 years ago, the archetypal surfer was somebody who, you know, went out into the water and barely got wet because that's what we knew from surfing movies. I mean, it was a much more vital and vibrant and demanding world. And to be kids growing up in that and to be tested as a kid like that and the kind of excitement that they talk about, you know, that they've lost is really kind of amazing. It's a kind of a 180 of the other films to that respect.
And they also don't necessarily want to be – I think they wanted to be famous, especially when they got out of the camper. And some of them went on to be, you know, in bands and famous bands and things like that. So they did get fame in their own way. But – Doc Paskowitz, the father of the group, you know, he was completely against money. He was terrified of success. You know, there's quotes in the movie where he's like, you know, I don't want my kids to find success. That's not going to help them out. And he himself was very outspoken about that. He didn't want to get any money. That money would kill the dream. As soon as they would get money, it'd be over.
It's the treatment. I'm talking to filmmaker Doug Prey. His new documentary is Surfwise. I mean, certainly Doc struck me in the way that we get to see him in the film as being really like one of the archetypes, one of the original beats, you know, not a hippie, not a passive sort of guy, but somebody who was really kind of fiercely dedicated to this code, which, again, is something that so many other people you focus on have, and devoted himself to it in this way that shut everything else out. You know, he reminded me of like a Kerouac or Neil Cassidy in that way.
It's true, and I definitely early on I asked him. I said, "So, what did you think of the hippies? Or is this any part of that?" He was like, "No, no, no." He just like railed. He didn't want anything to do with that association. And you know, I mean, even the fact that they ate granola is like, but that didn't mean that they fit into that sort of hippie stereotype. The fact is, he's it's more rigid. It's more intense. He's like He wants his family to be of the family of mankind, and he really wants to get back to how we're supposed to live. Here's another example. Like if you say to him, "Why did you live so unconventionally?" He'll just lose it. He'll just go, "What do you mean unconventionally? Our whole world, our whole country is completely out of whack. I was living conventionally. We were living like the Mongols in their tents." He'll go on and on and on about that, how he was just trying to take his family, his tribe, and live in that way that is truer in his mind to how we all should be. The only problem is they were in modern America. You know, they were just in the middle of like, I mean, they were on the beach and they were in the camper, so it was isolated. But, you know, they still were driving around and going to all the different states and going, you know, they just were on the road the whole time. But they were in America.
They weren't the Bedouin that he was trying to emulate.
Exactly. So it's just interesting, you know. One funny thing about Doc is that he's never seen the movie.
Still hasn't seen it.
And this fits into his whole rejection of fame and money. And he just he feels so strongly that he should be shameful that there was a movie made about him. He doesn't feel that way about the family. And the family has totally embraced the movie, and Juliet, the wife, the mother, who's an incredible.
You've got to talk about her because she's an amazing kid.
She's an incredible woman. You know, she's embraced the film, but Doc always felt that it was just wrong. You know, he said to me, "You should have made a movie about these other great surfers," and he would list all the surfers that are way better men than he is. He's a very difficult man. It's been a real journey for me, I got to say. Doc has been one of the most intense and difficult interviews I've ever had in my life. And yet I totally love the guy. I've been dealing with him for 5 years. So, and anyway, you asked about Juliet. But no, she's the woman who for 10 straight years was either breastfeeding or pregnant. And, you know, I so easily could have made an entire film just about Juliet.
Absolutely. And part of the movie to me is that it took her to launch this life for him, you know, and that's the kind of the real heart of the story to me is what she brought to his life once they got together.
They were very much so, very much a team. And she has told me so many times, and in the film as well, she would have followed him to the ends of the earth.
Well, she kind of did.
It's a love. The funny thing is, after all the stuff we've talked about, in the end, it really kind of is a love story.
Her calm. I mean, they really do balance each other. And just, you know, it's almost like she doesn't see, or she won't acknowledge that kind of fervor of his, because she has to deal with the reality of raising the kids and dealing with the kids in that way. But also, she's completely open to things, too. I mean, that odd and incredible sex life that they have, that the kids had to witness.
she's put up with a lot, and they're a deeply passionate couple, and they don't have a lot of inhibitions. And again,
that's one way of putting it.
Yeah, well, that gets talked about a lot in the movie, is just the way that they were very intimate, even in front of their children, and that's highly controversial to a lot of people. But that's, you know, again, Doc will defend that and say, well, that's how the Mongolians live, or that's how other people live, that's how tribes live in small tents, and so, you know, what's your problem? but Juliet has she's an amazing woman, and you know, the hardest part of this movie, I have to say, was really just balancing everything in the actual editing room. It could have been just about Juliet and her intensity and what she did, you know.
Well, but that makes me wonder, though, how long it took before you got it into the shape that it is in now. I mean, how many different edits did that take? And this is a film that does, as you say, it works in a three-act structure. So instead of getting these kind of almost Altman-esque type things that your other films have been about, it builds to a kind of a dramatic climax.
It took a long time. And it really just it was also a question of balancing it, because if it got too sort of brutal and critical of the family, then I would sit back and go, what's the point? Why am I making this movie? Why am I just like trashing this family? This makes no sense. You know, I mean, Doc is a great man and he's an interesting guy and he's inspiring to thousands of people. What's my problem? Why am I doing this? And so, you know, and it couldn't have gone too dark. But it's like, you know, so at the same time, I wanted it to be inspiring. But I know, you know, it wasn't a good movie without a lot of conflict. And there was plenty of conflict to go around. So it was just like this balancing act. And we'd do a cut and it would just feel too happy, like Village of the Happy People kind of thing. And in the end, I definitely wanted the movie to communicate the idea that you should pursue your dreams. You really should. And even though, but just be aware that there's a price to pay. Everybody in my films so far has pursued something very intensively at the expense of kind of a normal life.
Well, and that's where we got to wrap it up. Doug, I'm sorry we're out of time.
It's great talking to you.
Oh, my pleasure, Doug. Thanks for doing this again. My guest is director Doug Prey. His new documentary is Surfwise. Our technical director at KCRW in Santa Monica is Mario Diaz, with assistance from Lashek Borchek at Carnegie Recording Studios. Bob Carlson is the editor. Gemma Dempsey is the producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. Cowabunga, it's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.